Ben, we're talking about a report called Recapturing the American Dream, Meeting the Challenges of the Bay State's Lost a Decade. Tell us what this study is about.
We spent the last year looking at all sorts of economic data, trying to figure out what happened in the state's economy during the last decade. It was a turbulent time. We had the dot-com bust, and we had a major asset bubble in our real estate, and that collapsed, leading to the Great Recession. But I think despite all that noise, there are some patterns that are revealing and helpful to us as we think about how we move forward.
Tell us about some of the conclusions.
I think one thing that really is glaring in the data is the disconnect between education and economic development in Massachusetts. We've got the best educated workforce in the nation, but we've trailed both in growing our economy, what we produce, in creating jobs. And so I think going forward, we've got to figure out how we make sure that our efforts to increase educational attainment and prepare people for jobs in the new economy are connected with growing the economy overall.
Because we assume that more education means better jobs, but that's not what this is saying.
No, we have the most educated workforce, but during the last decade, we had the sixth worst job creation record, and we trailed in overall output the national average as well. So clearly the link has been broken in a way, and we're still trying to figure out why and what to do about it. But I think, some ideas emerge from the research.
Well, my next question was going to be why. So this is something that is really hard to understand, then, why this has happened.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that's clear in the data is we underperformed our potential over the last decade. Our industries didn't grow as fast as those same industries grew outside of Massachusetts. If they had, we would have gained 75,000 jobs instead of losing 140,000+ jobs. There's different explanations for why we haven't done as well. One is the high cost here, and it makes it very difficult for businesses to locate here, especially businesses that are employing middle-income workers, because middle-income workers feel those costs most intensely. And so they'd rather be in a place like North Carolina or Arizona or somewhere where the costs are lower. So that's a perpetual challenge for us.
So the traditional manufacturing jobs that we think of have disappeared, but aren't there high-tech jobs and life science jobs in this economy?
Yeah, I think one thing that we haven't talked enough about is we lost almost as many jobs in finance and insurance, one of our growing sectors in the past, as we lost in manufacturing. We gained jobs and outperformed the country in life sciences and some small niche sectors, but those certainly aren't enough to replace the middle-income, middle-class jobs that we've been losing at a pretty good clip.
In terms of how this is going to influence how people talk about job development and growth in the future, what can you tell them, or is it too early to actually make any recommendations?
Well, I think one of the bright sides to the story, and we're starting to see this in the most recent economic data, is that we may be emerging from the recession faster than our places simply because we've started to transition even away from the middle-skilled jobs more than other places have. As those jobs go overseas to developing countries where they have people who speak English very well and can do some of the same things at much lower cost that our middle-income workers were doing, other states are going to lose a lot of those jobs. We haven't created as many of them, so we've kind of turned that corner in a sense. So I think that's a bright spot. There's still a question about what we do going forward to create opportunities for middle-income, middle-class residents.
Basically, the middle-income wage owners have taken the biggest hit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. For the first time in decades, median household income, so income for the middle households right in the middle, declined in Massachusetts by about 6%. In median family income, when you look at families, that was just about stagnant over the last decade. That hasn't happened before. With rising costs in health care and education and housing, it's something that families feel a squeeze from, and we need to do more to help families gain from the growth that there has been. It's not that our economy hasn't grown at all, but there's been a disconnect between growth in productivity and growth in wages.
Is there a disconnect between the type of education people are receiving and the jobs that are available?
the disparity between what the highest educated workers, those with a master's degree and above, and the least educated, those without a high school education, was just 2-1 in 1980, and now it's 4-1. So the returns to a college education have definitely increased, and it's become sort of a necessity almost to sustain a family. At the same time, though, the middle skilled jobs are college educated jobs for the most part. We haven't created enough of those, and there's you know a large number of college graduates who aren't working in college level jobs. So there's work to be done, from the low end to the middle.
So that earnings ratio doesn't really apply if you don't have a job.
Oh, absolutely not. No, the returns to a college education aren't experienced by workers who have the degrees but aren't working in a job that requires a college education. And that's what we've seen, especially this recession has disproportionately impacted our young residents. In fact, since over the last decade, we created about 240,000 jobs for people over age 55, and we lost about 220,000 jobs for people between ages 25 and 44. So it's really the young people that are struggling. And many of them hold college degrees, but they're working in restaurants and other positions that don't require that education. And until they get into a college labor market job, they won't experience the benefits, the financial benefits of their investment in their college education.
Well, you mentioned we created so many more jobs for those 55 and older. Is that the case of creating them or just people are working older?
No, that's a good point. I think they may be staying in the workforce longer because they need to. And as a result, it's not creating the openings down for people to enter. We know that it creates a lot of problems for people to not have early workforce experience. And so, we're talking about a generation of workers that could be set back in certain ways, that'll have impacts for their lifetimes.
Especially those with a lot of student debt.
Yeah. Our median household income, I was saying, has dropped by about 6%. It would have dropped a lot more if it weren't for the fact that those older, higher-paid workers were still in the workforce.
We talk about the workforce as if it's a static quantity, but isn't, in fact, a lot of jobs are being taken by people moving into Massachusetts from other states, other countries? Do you have any way of measuring that?
We can measure that. We know that the Great Recession sort of froze people in place, so there hasn't been as dramatic of an outflow. For the first half of the decade, there were hundreds of thousands of middle class residents who were moving out of state simply because they couldn't find a middle class job or a job that paid enough to cover the high cost of living in the region, and that sort of all stopped when the economy froze. But in other states really aren't doing any better at job creation at the moment than we are. But if we return to the way things were, we could have, see again a lot of outflow of middle-income residents. And there certainly is a lot of inflow from other states and abroad of very skilled people coming to jobs in unique new economy industries in the greater Boston area in particular.
And they're making good salaries.
Oh, absolutely.
So my question is, does that mean we don't have the trained workforce here if we have people moving from India, China, other countries to take these high-tech jobs?
Well, I think we have the most educated workforce in the country, and we continue to educate our students, in the K-12 level better than any other state in the country. Our students compete nationally. So I don't think it's that issue so much as the industries we're creating here. Often there's three people in the world that can do the job the company is looking for. So no matter how hard we tried, I think we're not always going to fill those with homegrown talent.
Well, we talk about, middle-income people can't find jobs with middle-income wage. What is the wage level that's considered, affordable that would allow people to – what is the living wage in Massachusetts?
In the greater Boston area, the median family income is about $85,000. It drops – considerably as you get outside of Greater Boston. In Springfield, families are earning more like $60,000 and less in the Berkshires. So, you know,
it depends on where you live.
It depends on where you live.
So you're moving out of the state. It doesn't really make any difference where it, you know, where it is. It's kind of all relative, right?
Yeah. And again, those are what the census showed the family in the middle is earning. Now, you could go and ask those families, is that enough to make ends meet? And it'd be a different story. There was a big sort of to-do last year when a University of Chicago law professor said, you know, the families that are earning $250,000 are struggling to stay in the middle class in today's environment.
The workforce challenge, tell us about that.
We do have an older workforce, and at some point all those 55 and above workers who are hanging in there are going to come out, and then there's going to be a great need for replacement workers. And the question is, with all these young workers who haven't had the workforce experience, employers are really going to struggle to find prepared workers to replace those who are aging out. And it's going to be more of a dilemma in Massachusetts than other states face because our state is a little grayer.
Also, you talk about underutilized labor. We have a workforce. Not only are they not finding jobs, but those who are working are underutilized.
Yeah, one of the key findings from the report is one in four workers in Massachusetts are either unemployed, underemployed, they're not working as many hours as they would like, or they're working in jobs that don't require the full skill set they have. So.
We always think of Massachusetts as having a relatively small gap between the rich and the poor, but that apparently has changed dramatically as well over the last 10 years.
Well, 40 years ago, Massachusetts was one of the most equal states when you looked at the income distribution from top to bottom. And now we are one of the most unequal, depending on how you measure it. And there's no question that there's been a huge accumulation of wealth at the top of the income distribution. In 1991, the top 1% were earning 12% of all the income in Massachusetts, and today they're earning almost a quarter of all the income in Massachusetts. And, you know, that's been part of the national debate about the 99%.
Well, right. Is that part of the fuel of the Occupy Wall Street movement?
And, I think when you look at the national numbers, we stand out even further on the issue of inequality. I think
we're more unequal than the national.
Yeah. You know, for example, the top 1% earn about 18% of all the income nationally, and here they're earning right now 22%. So we are more unequal. And again, we rank. If you rank us according to income inequality, you rank one, maybe two behind New York. At the household level, at the family level, we're a little further back because we have such high rates of marriage. So there's less. Variation there, but it's a problem that we're at the leading edge of, I would say.
Another surprising finding was what you call the gender gap, and this is a little shocking to read. The great majority of jobs created apparently are for women and not men. How does that explain?
A lot of it's in industrial change that's happened over the last couple of decades. We've lost our manufacturing, typically jobs that were held by males. But I think there are other angles to it that are more difficult to explain. I mean, women are increasingly taking more and more seats or filling more and more seats in higher ed. Men aren't doing as well in K through 12, graduating at as higher rates. When you look at minority communities in particular, there was a study that showed that men were graduating from college, Latino and African American men in Boston, at half the rate of women in those communities. And so that has implications for household formation, whether people marry, and that in turn affects their long-term economic security and economic mobility for future generations.
And is it also true that the new jobs being created or jobs that are being created can be done by either gender, whereas the old traditional manufacturing jobs are primarily men?
Yeah. I mean, when you look at the recession, too, men bore the brunt of that. More so than in any other state, the jobs that were lost in Massachusetts were lost by men. Again, I don't think we understand all the intricacies of the problem fully, but I think it's an issue that is gaining more and more attention.
You also talk about large regional disparities in economic growth across the state's regions. I mean, you have Boston. Then you have Fall River, then you have the Berkshires or Cape Cod or Worcester. So the state is anything but homogeneous in terms of its economic development.
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at family incomes, they're 60% higher in Boston than they are in Pittsfield. They're 40% higher in Boston than they are in Springfield. And that's in the region. So if you looked at the city of Springfield or the city of Pittsfield, you'd see a greater disparity. That's an economic development problem that needs to be solved as well. You know, I think you can attribute it some to disproportionate patterns of state investment and focus on industries that are unique to greater Boston and less attention to the clusters that are really critical to regions that drive economies in other parts of the state.
The fourth part of this is restoring confidence in the American dream. And I noticed the cover story of your publication, Commonwealth, this month is the American Scream. Tell us about what's happened in terms of confidence in various sectors. For instance, confidence in higher education. Because you just said, well, gee, we have the highest educated workforce, but we're losing a lot of jobs. So a lot of students are wondering, is college worth it?
I mean, our system relies on individuals making the investment in college. You know, in Europe, in Canada and other places, it's free. And so people don't have to risk their dollar to the extent they do here when they decide to go on to college. If we're not better at getting college graduates into college jobs, it could be a problem down the road in terms of keeping students focused on achieving credentials that we know are critical to their futures as individuals in an economy that really puts a high premium on skills.
So we do have this paradox. On the one hand, it's really important, but on the other hand, if you're graduating, you may have a harder time finding a job.
Yeah. I think one of the stories that's really interesting here, and there's debate among economist Lawrence Katz, the former Clinton administration official, thinks that we need to keep educating people and getting them into college jobs, and that is really critical to decreasing income inequality. But Ron Ferguson, an expert at the Harvard Education School, who recently put out a report that captured a lot of attention called Pathways to Prosperity, noted that we need to look at vocational education and other forms of training that can provide large returns as well, but aren't a one-size-fits-all model.
I mean, it's hard to plan for the future when you don't really know what the future holds, in terms of where the job's coming from, right?
I do think there are things that we, you know, on the policy front that we know we could and should do. You know, one that's been talked about for a long time is making work pay. They do that at the federal level with the earned income tax credit, which is a refund to low-wage workers at the end of the year, or it can be taken throughout the year. We have the same thing at the state level, but it's very modest. And for years, people have been talking about increasing it. And I think that really deserves a lot of consideration because low-wage work isn't necessarily going to be high-wage work. But people who are doing those jobs in a state that's very expensive deserve an opportunity to make ends meet. You know, trying to get some of the dislocated workers, people who've been out of work or haven't been able to get into the labor market, into the economy with things like tax credits to firms that could encourage some hiring of those workers could have an impact and help address some of that problem. I think on the education front, universities are sort of more and more focused on tailoring their education to the needs of the job market. I think for a little while, there may be less focus on the liberal arts education and more on where you can get a toehold in the economy, and that may not be such a bad thing as we go through this period of restructuring. I think lastly, it's really important to note that Massachusetts has really been relentless about investing in education and trying to reform and improve education. I think even though we're saying that there's this economic development education paradox at the moment, I think long term that focus is going to really pay off for Massachusetts. I think in some ways it already has. We have some of the wealthiest families in the state and some of the highest wages in the state, in the country. And I think that as build new industries, the new opportunities, our workers will be prepared for those new opportunities.
We hear all the time about, you know, high-tech graduates from Harvard and MIT leaving this area and going to California. Is that noticed in these census figures?
Not so much, no.
They get their education here, then they move on.
Yeah. Well, I think that story is sort of, why didn't Facebook stay here? Why don't those...
Although Mark Zuckerberg says he wants to come back.
Get to that point. But we incubate the companies here and they grow elsewhere. The ideas come here and they grow elsewhere. Well, elsewhere where they grow, that's where the middle class jobs are created. So if there was a way to keep those companies from going elsewhere, as they grow and become more mature, that's where they could hire more middle income workers. And so, I think it's a variety of different things we need to do to keep them here. In some part, it was just that people thought Silicon Valley was where you need to go to grow a business. And Mark Zuckerberg saying, no, actually, this is a better environment for people who are thinking about stewarding something over the long term could really help us. I think the fact that, we've stayed committed to K-12 education, whereas, you look at a place like California and their public school system is really in shambles, I think is a real asset that increasingly people are going to value for the state. But our high housing costs and our transportation issues are real risks for us, I think. That said, the state has held education aid harmless all through this recession. Other states, like Texas, have cut billions of dollars in education funding. I think relative to our competitors, we've done a good job. One of the things that we looked at in our middle class index was K-12 teacher ratios, because we thought, if there's one statistic you could look at that would tell you, are public schools serving the middle class or at a quality level that will keep the middle class coming, is what's happening with those teacher ratios. And they've gone down over the decade, and they remain some of the lowest in the country.
Now, we're talking here about the American dream. A lot of people may not have the faith in the American dream they once had, and your studies kind of reconfirm that, don't they?
Yeah. We did a lot of polling data looking at this question, and the results are concerning. When we asked people over the last 10 years, has it become easier or more difficult to live the kind of life your family wants to live? 54% said more difficult, only 11% said easier. When we asked, looking ahead, do you think the next generation will be financially better off than or worse off, 48% said worse off, only 17% said better off. When we asked people if they were middle class, and looking just at people who said they were middle class, if they were in danger of falling out of the middle class or whether they were securely in the middle class, a third said they were in danger of falling out of the middle class. Only 9% said that they were positioned to move up out of the middle class. So there's a lot of sentiment among the state's middle class that the future isn't as bright as the past. And, economics is all about sentiment. And so one of the challenges we have is to get people optimistic about our trajectory.
Well, that is a challenge. Tell me what 97.4 means. This is on a feature page called the Middle Class Index. What does that mean?
Well, one thing that's really noticeable when you look at all the reams of economic data we have is nobody's really looked at, within those numbers, how's the middle doing? We have the poverty rate that looks at the well-being of poorest residents and whether they're earning just enough to squeak by. But there really is no indicator of middle class vitality. And, we tried to build one. And when we did that, we put 26 different indicators together and looked at how they changed since 2000. The number we came to was 97.4. So they've declined by almost 3% since 2000. And that in itself is kind of not very alarming or newsworthy.
It doesn't sound like much.
Yeah, and it isn't much. And an institution as large as the middle class, if we had a number that showed it disappearing entirely, I think people would question that as well. But what is concerning is there's sort of leading indicators within our index, and those are the ones that look at financial security. And those drop precipitously over the decade. to 76.4. So there's about a 25% drop in financial security. And I think that really suggests that the road could get bumpier for families. Over the past decade, we were able to maintain a lot of what we had as pillars of middle-class status. So we increased the number of people who were graduating and going on to college. We increased the number of people who went to college and then graduated. We increased the number of people with health insurance. We increased the number of people that owned homes. But we really struggled to do all those things. And, you know, with income stagnating and health care costs rising, housing costs rising, people aren't saving as much anymore. They're not saving for retirement. There's a couple of interesting things that are in here that aren't in our other work. You know, one is looking at income volatility. Economists have been debating whether income has become more volatile as our economy changes. You know, the product lifestyle gets shorter. That means companies come and go more quickly. They go on and do different things, so they workers get laid off more frequently, even in the good times. And we saw, and nobody's ever looked at this at the state level. We looked at data just for Massachusetts and saw that we have had an increase in volatility that tracks sort of the national average. And if you think that the chance that somebody's going to lose a good share of their income at any good point in time, how do they respond? Hopefully they would do it by increasing their savings, but we don't see any increase in savings. Some would say, well, that's because you can't get any interest on your savings anymore, but we don't see any increase in people who are putting money in the stock market either. The investor class is actually shrinking in Massachusetts. But we do see, you know, large increases in student debt you know, a significant increase in how much of people are paying for housing as a share of their income. We've seen, you know, a sizable increase in people filing for personal bankruptcy, so that's another indicator that people are strained.
I was just wondering, as you pore over your research figures and then you look out the window perhaps or look on the news and see the Occupy Boston demonstrators, what was your reaction when that first started?
Well, and that's one of the reasons why we want to build the index too, because I think the debate isn't always a productive one, and it's not always focused on the right issues. And I think a set of indicators that provide objective data about what is and isn't happening could be very valuable. I mean, one thing we found, for example, is that healthcare cost burden in Massachusetts hasn't really increased as much as it has elsewhere. Our employers shoulder a much larger share of our healthcare costs than they do elsewhere. And you know, relative to income, we're doing better on that measure than other places are. I mean, there's a lot of different things that people could debate, but I think it's helpful for them to have.
When you see these demonstrations spreading, you know, across the world, is this like it may not surprise you because you're seeing this frustration build?
No. I mean, and a lot of that has to do with the inequality in our society, and that's been building up for a long time. It actually slowed during the last decade. It was worse in the prior two decades, but the fact that we're still continuing to pull apart when you know, the middle and below is really, really struggling. I think, you know, many would say it's high time coming.
Now, in terms of this unexplainable loss of jobs, could it simply be that despite Massachusetts' positive attributes, education, high-tech industry, and so forth, that we're swimming upstream against a national and global current of downward force, that so no matter how much we try, we're not going to do as well? Although, is there anything unique to Massachusetts, or are we just part of a national global trend?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's something to consider. Most of our economy relies on other states and not other nations. The bright spot is other nations. I mean, the developing world is growing. There's real opportunities to reach new markets, and, you know, that's, I think the administration and others have been real focused on developing trade relationships as a state and really trying to grow those opportunities for Massachusetts businesses. That's probably the right model. But at the same time, the nation needs to do well for us to do well. And we've emerged from this recession ahead of the nation in some ways.
Well, I mean, a lot of people do feel that Massachusetts is better poised than a lot of other states to take advantage of any economic recovery should it occur. However, It seems to me like everybody's pointing, well, you know, we're such an able, high-tech state. We really have the resources. High technology is the future. Yeah. Is that not true?
I mean, if you look at the things that we're trading, they're medical devices and weapons, defense. Mm-hmm.
Which could be impacted severely, the defense spending, right?
Yeah, at the national level here. But, I mean, we're sending, you know, armaments to other countries around the world. So I think, I mean, the future of that – I'm not going to make predictions.
But it's a strong industry.
Yeah. On the medical devices side, I think, you know, as the world becomes wealthier, there's going to be a lot of need to purchase those things. So I think there's a lot of opportunity there for us. But I think we also need to diversify and build our export base. And we're actually not, a leading export state. There's other states that export significantly more than Massachusetts, so we've got our work to do there as well.
So when you take all of this information and you approach the policymakers here in the state, what can they glean from this that's going to be meaningful in terms of developing policy that's going to produce results?
Well, part is urgency, and I'm sure they have that already. I think everybody understands that there are hundreds of thousands of out-of-work residents and that residents are struggling to make ends meet. I think as we sift through this, hopefully we can become more focused and precise about recommendations. But I go back to some of the things we mentioned earlier about tax credits to companies that hire workers who are long-term unemployed. I think universities working with industry and government to make sure that their training and their graduates are have a sort of seamless entry to the workforce. And I think, you know, focusing on some of the issues that young men in particular are having, preparing for jobs in the new economy is a challenge. And there's, you know, some promising models that are out there, and they've actually been well studied. So I think we're going to have a sense of what works, and hopefully we'll invest according to what we find.
Well, the only thing we've heard come out of Beacon Hill is a rather agonizing struggle to approve casino gambling, which seems to be the only economic development idea that they have. So I wonder, if even they will be able to respond to this information.
You know, and again, I would say on the one hand, I think the state's done excellent in terms of its economic development focus and education at the K-12 level, pushing for reform and supporting our schools with spending. On the other side of economic development policy, how you support industries, I think we haven't been so great. I think we've been somewhat distracted by casinos. They will create a lot of jobs in the near term, and that's something we need. But on the other hand, we're spending a lot of money on things like the film tax credit, which I think economists widely understand is a waste of state resources at a time when we're desperate to spend every dollar as best we can.
So what do we have that offers some hope and some optimism and direction for the future when we look at all of this material?
Well, what we're trying to do in Massachusetts isn't the easiest thing. States can create a lot of low-wage jobs, and we're trying to create high-wage jobs. And so I don't think we should get discouraged, because that in and of itself is a challenge. But I think, thinking about how we create an economy where growth is broadly shared is something that needs a lot of attention. When you create a lot of high-wage jobs, that has implications for people at the bottom as well. It means that costs get higher. People have a more difficult time affording the state. And we can support families with things like earned income tax credits. I think, again, in the middle, I think it's about thinking through how we train and prepare people with vocational training and other things that allows people with all different skills and energies to contribute in our economy.
And the other thing, I think, which is very significant when you have such an intense, for instance, you have MIT, Harvard, all these incredible educational institutions that are spinning off companies, you know, from their own research. We talked before about the fact that, you know, they incubate the companies here, then they leave. And it seems to me we're not getting to why they're leaving or what we can do to keep them here. So is there something we can do, or do they simply prefer the climate in California compared to Boston?
Well, you know, I think the transportation issue there is critical. I mean, the reason those companies are going to be successful is because the MBTA and because they can get to Kendall Square, the innovation district in the seaport, to the new North Point area that's being developed, or the new life sciences center that Harvard's going to build in Alston. If we let the MBTA fail, it would be a huge economic development loss for us. I think that's something that really needs to be debated as we debate our economic future, because it's the workhorse of the greater Boston economy, as others have said. It's an asset that's somewhat unique. Not many places have that kind of transportation infrastructure, but it's also one that's in serious jeopardy.
Did you read what Mark Zuckerberg said during that forum? What was he saying that made Boston better than Silicon Valley?
It seemed to me he was saying that people are more scattershot in Silicon Valley. They want to jump from one project to the next. And if you're trying to grow a company into, you know, the Fortune 100, a company that has real staying power, it's useful to do it in a place like Massachusetts where I guess the idea of building value and in a business is kind of a Yankee spirit that we have here that he appreciates.
And yet Steve Jobs and Bill Gates did okay on the West Coast.
Yeah, but they did it in a different era. I think, you know, he would even say that 10 years ago they had investors and people with skills and experience that was hard to find here. And I think anybody who spends any time in Kendall Square today says the energy is completely different, that everywhere you look there's a venture capitalist and someone who's created a $1 billion company who can talk to you about how it's done. And so I think more and more we're winning on that front.
So that may be the future.
Yeah. Then the question is, I mean, I think, you know, one thing that you hear talked about often is, do we have a boutique economy, and is that a four-letter word?
What do you mean by that? Just for a certain few?
That we have these niche industries here that they employ a select set of people, that many of those people come from outside of the state, that state tax dollars have gone to grow those industries, but the benefits don't accrue to the average Joe. I think a lot of people may have that feeling, and it's a really a hard question to answer. I mean, certainly we wouldn't want to be Michigan or Ohio.
In terms of?
You know, having an old economy, you know, having real high unemployment, having population loss. Boston isn't Detroit today because of those new economy industries. You know, at the same time, they create enormous wealth for a few, and that creates pressures on other people. We have to work to see that economic growth is broadly shared in our commonwealth.
Let me ask you about the geographical disparities in the state. So we could have this high-tech incubator, you know, emanating from Kendall Square and creating all of these companies and so forth and so on. But the challenge is having this sort of migrate to areas like Fall River and Springfield and areas that really do need economic development.
Yeah, that's a challenge that, again, nobody's quite figured it out yet, but I think we're learning. I think, you know, you see some of the biotech manufacturing being done outside of greater Boston. It could be done anywhere in the world, but companies are choosing to do it in Massachusetts. That's creating some jobs, you know, for people that have middle skills. I think that's an excellent thing. On the other hand, the state's economic development policy has been very focused on life sciences research and development for quite a while now, and it's not clear that will ever lead to strong, robust job creation in other parts of the state. You know, one of the challenges that regions right outside of Boston have is that the energy here draws people in. So firms, you know, that may have been started by a UMass professor in the Pioneer Valley, the temptation is just too great to pick up and move a little ways down the road. So how you even that out, I think, is a challenge. But, you know, it starts with making sure that those core cities are vibrant places, because we know that regions that have strong urban centers are more productive, especially in this new economy. And there's no reason that Springfield should suffer from the level of disinvestment it has. It's simply a lack of focus at the state level, I think, to help that community rebuild and reposition. And I think, you know, Worcester is an economic asset that we have that's often isolated. I think there's been some work, you know, to improve the MBTA connections to Worcester, to put UMass Medical School in Worcester. But particularly as a lot of the state's economy moves to the western suburbs, there's a real opportunity to make Worcester a second engine in the state's economy.
You brought up one other interesting issue, too, the fact that some of these high-tech life science companies may indeed come up with products and so forth, but it's not the same kind of manufacturing that we would have done decades ago. In other words, they make a product that maybe isn't manufacturable really easily here or...
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it. You know, we have an advanced manufacturing strategy. There is real potential, especially to create exports with advanced manufacturing products. But a factory today, may employ 40 people, whereas, you know, in the past it employed 400.
That's a real factor, I think, the whole scheme of things. You don't have these big manufacturing companies like Texas Instruments or and the ones that you do have are a lot of them are defense contracting related, which I think is going to take a big hit. So let me go back to one thing that really is the most striking thing that comes out of this report, at least for me. Despite extraordinary levels of educational attainment, Massachusetts had the nation's seventh slowest job creation record during the last decade, with an actual 4.5% drop in payroll employment. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm trying to get at. Despite all of this investment and effort in education, it doesn't seem to be paying off in terms of creating jobs. And have you yet been able to ascertain why?
When people look at why Massachusetts isn't creating jobs, the first thing they put their finger on is our high housing costs. I mean, there's no region that has high housing costs that is creating as many jobs as the industries within that region suggest it should. And that's especially true here. You can't make it hard for people to live and also attract employers to a place.
But that seems to be the kind of market challenge that you can't do that much about because the market's going to seek its own level in a sense.
No. I mean, we artificially restrict the market supply by creating all sorts of difficulties to development. And there's other regions that don't have those barriers. You know, Texas in particular, that job creation king, they were able to, expand their housing supply and create a lot of jobs over the last decade. If we could do the same here, we would have a lot of success.
We notice rents are skyrocketing in Boston, even though housing prices are remaining kind of depressed.
Yeah, I mean, about the only people who love Boston's real estate markets are real estate developers because they know their investment is protected. It's so hard to build here. If they own something here over the long term, they're going to get great returns. But our businesses bear the brunt of that. We can't create jobs when it's so expensive to bring people here and keep them here.
Isn't that partly, though, I mean, if you want to change that, aren't you going to upset a lot of people who want to preserve the character of their communities and so forth?
Well, you know, I think we have a couple of different solutions. One is to build in cities that want the development. And it's expensive to build upwards, but there's a lot of infill development. There's a lot of mills that we have that could easily be converted to housing. The challenge is you have to make cities attractive, and they are to one segment of our population, but middle-class families with children continue to leave cities because they're not confident in their public education. When we talk about sort of the focus on closing the achievement gap, I think that's really where it hits home because, you know, education reform has been largely about urban education reform, and that's largely about how cities can get poor students to do as well as wealthy students, and that's a real difficult thing. And it's something that can be done. The charter schools and others have proved it to us, and we shouldn't lose focus on that for a minute because it has such huge returns to society when you can maximize the potential of every person. But at the same time, an altogether different set of problems is why families don't think cities are good places to live. And I think if we ask and answer those questions, you could grow the city of Boston overnight, to 1 million residents.
So part of that's infrastructure, part of it's crime, part of those factors?
Yeah, I think it's schools first and foremost, but I think, as the city grows, infrastructure needs will become critical. You know, the T is already over capacity, especially in Kendall Square, where they're going to add millions of square feet of new jobs. How you're going to get people to those jobs is a real question. I mean, you have the most talented people on earth there, and they get treated like cattle every day on their way to work. And I think there we have to ask ourselves, do we want to lose those people? Where are they going to go? I mean,
that's the thing. If we want jobs, we need a serious conversation about what it takes to create jobs.
And it takes a minimal sort of sacrifice on individuals to secure the T's future. And in exchange for that, businesses get the security of having their workers, a reliable way to get their workers to work, and they create jobs, and everybody would benefit from it. But people have to be willing to make that small sacrifice. We're, you know, we just did a report looking at it last week, and it would be like $1.50 a week for the typical worker just within Greater Boston. That's not asking people in Springfield or the Berkshires to solve the T's problems. It seems like a manageable ask, and it seems like, you know, the average resident would enjoy large benefits from that. And well, it's the same thing, too, you know, when we talk about solving our housing problems. We're not asking people to change completely the character of their communities. We're asking, you know, for the suburbs in strategic places within them to allow some higher density so that we can each sort of do our part to accommodate the region's population growth. And we're also asking, you know, for the state to make investments in cities that revitalize the neighborhoods, that put them back on their feet. And I think, again, that would provide large returns to the average citizen because, one, we wouldn't have to give so much local aid to those cities that don't have an income tax base of their own. And, two, we'd have lots more housing opportunities and also opportunities for business space. That, and those are kind of the oil in our region's economy.
One last question, Ben. Is there hope for the American dream?
Yeah, I mean, I think anybody would be crazy to doubt America, and Massachusetts in particular. I think sometimes it takes us a while, but we figure it out.
Thank you, Ben.
Thank you.